name's Ethan Diven, and I'm the host of Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of the Operations Group of the National Training Center at Fort Irwin, California, as part of NTC's Warrior Chronicles. The Gauntlet drives warfighting by talking to leaders from our joint force about the crucible of ground combat, leadership, training, and fighting at the crown jewel of our Army. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Major Tim Lee and Major Brent Lanier, the Brigade XO and S3, respectively, from the Strike Brigade, 2nd Armored Brigade Combat Team, 1st Armored Division, who are in an awesome position to reflect on their experiences from their recent rotation 2507. Fellas, I'm going to ask you to reflect on what you've learned from this leadership experience while planning, preparing, and executing large-scale combat operations here at the NTC. Thanks for joining us today, fresh from your experience. I'd like you to just introduce yourself briefly, and then we'll get right into it. Tim, why don't you start us off, please?
Tim Lee, the 2nd Brigade XO. I've been in this position for just about a year now. Served in 1st Armored Division twice now. The first time was as a company commander, then this last term as the division chops, SGS, then Battalion XO, now Brigade XO.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the opportunity for Tim and I to do this. Sir, I've been heavy throughout my career. I started with Black Horse, so this is my first duty station, and it's awesome to be back. I commanded in 21AD. As a company commander, and 1/6 Infantry as the tank company commander in HHC, a west to east rotation back in 2001. So it was awesome to see this same terrain again, but a different perspective, a different echelon. I've served in the SFAB and then 2 years on division staff. One of the highlights on division staff that Tim and I both had was a division in the dirt rotation. This actually coincided with Strike's 2210 rotation. We were down in the Southern Corridor, but served as the division chops just right after Tim. And now we're to get back together as the Brigade 3 and XO, sir.
So I'm going to ask you guys, what were your biggest lessons from this rotation? And Tim, I'm going to come to you first again.
Hands down, it was how to sustain an entire organization. Not a battalion, not a unit, but how do we actually sustain an entire organization to match the tempo that commanders drive? That was by far the number one thing I learned. The best analogy I can give is... previously, we always know what priority support, we always brief priority support, priority fires, et cetera, et cetera. For the first time, we actually had to put the money where our mouth is. Specifically for 1/6 during the live fire portion, it took us 3 battle periods to learn this. 1/6 was not the priority of support, it was actually 137, but we had a unit in contact running black on ammo. But however, we could not actually resupply them as quick as they wanted to or with the amount that they wanted to without first checking in with the other organization, the main effort, which is 137. 137 was a priority of support. So because of that, we had to hold our resupply to 1/6, wait to talk to 137, and make decisions on whether or not a unit in contact, black on ammo, is actually going to get the full amount that they requested. I remember that moment specifically where the decisions that I made or the recommendations that I made literally is shaping whether or not soldiers in the field get the ammo, the full allotment that they wanted, versus sending it to the actual main effort. And all of that is understanding where we are in the fight, where the brigade commander has put his effort, and because of that, where the tempo resides and what we must do as a sustainment community to match that tempo to ensure that that unit actually gets what they needed to. Fortunately for us, it worked out. We were able to give both battalions a heavily weighted towards 137, less of 1/6. But again, we proved to be successful. But I remember specifically in that period that the words priority of support and sustaining an organization actually mattered, as opposed to what traditionally is, we brief priority support, but there's no action behind the words.
I love what you said. Words actually have meaning, and you get to see them in the tactical application of how we fight here.
100%,
really,
sir.
Well said. Brent, how about you? What was your biggest kind of takeaway?
Sir, I think the biggest takeaway was finding out what exactly battalion commanders needed to fight. And that was most evident, I think, after the first battle period, and we were transitioning to the counterattack. We executed that commander's visualization up on Hill 960. You were there, sir, along with Bronco team, and we huddled around the map, and it became very clear that we had a very condensed planning timeline to execute RDSP. What is it that battalion commanders needed to fight? They needed a frago with a clear logical sequence of critical tasks. They needed triggers to be addressed in that frago, but also they needed a refined X check. But more importantly, and lastly, I'll address the importance of graphics. So refined graphics, not just analog, but JBCP as well. That was absolutely crucial in getting them to Objective Angels, which was the pass complex. But bottom line, we had about 3 hours to produce these products, and that's ultimately what we pushed. I will also emphasize, and this will be a theme throughout, but just over-communication and rapid dissemination of these products. And the critical piece there that I learned is that you've got to rapidly disseminate products via WebMC, which is a JBCP interface on your TAC Zipper computer, and you literally have the means of communicating to all JBCPs within the formation. And we executed that. Battalion commanders stated that they had what they needed. That was not always the case for every battle period, but for that first battle period, as we executed that product production following that RDSP session, I think that's what was identified as essential. And my last point on this, sir, pertains to the sync mat. So Tim has done a phenomenal job of synchronizing the staff, and one of the biggest outputs of that is generation of the sync mat. The sync mat can be very cumbersome during the fight and keeping it relevant. That doesn't mean that we can, that doesn't mean that the relevance of the sync mat is negated. I think a sync mat is still required as you execute MDMP. However, when it comes to executing RDSP and you're not able to update the sync mat, at least you have that baseline, the sync mat that the X check is derived from, and you can update the X check at a minimum, and battalion commanders have what they need to fight.
We talked a little bit about minimum force requirements to execute the task, but what are the fighting products that actually need to be created with a finite amount of time so that subordinates can actually do the refinements of their plan and go truly fight off of whatever the staff created? And we sometimes don't review doctrine where the synchronization matrix is a note-taking method for the output of war gaming or co-analysis. It's actually the refinement into an execution matrix or an execution checklist that is what's most helpful for subordinates. We often skip that step and we high-five, you know, and drink Rippets together after we create the sync mat, but it's so big and unwieldy, it's not actually a helpful fighting product. So really well said. So let me ask, what was harder than you were expecting it to be?
Realizing that we were not as good as we thought we were going to be. The desert is humbling. Everything comes out during the desert. No matter how good you think you are, you're not. Specifically for us, it was the execution of the two-minute drill. The two-minute drill, everybody does it. Just to go over it, it's essentially all the staff briefs within a few minutes of their running estimates of everything they know about that specific, about their warfighting function. We rehearsed it. We had an SOP for it. We used it. We've done it several times. However, we soon learned that the execution matrix or the two-minute drill that we were using didn't actually drive any action. So we were heavily coached by the Bronco team. And this was probably the best thing that I took away from this is it was so hard to not just execute the two-minute drill, because we did that, but execute it to where it mattered. If you're just executing a two-minute drill, this is something that I learned within the first battle period. If you're just executing a two-minute drill just to talk and it doesn't drive action, then you're just briefing each other just to brief each other, and we're just high-fiving each other, talking about the awesomeness of our warfighting function. By the end of the third battle period, our two-minute drills were refined to the point where every two-minute drill produced either an update to the X-Check, the DSM, potentially task org recommendation changes. Overall, besides just a shared understanding, it was now I can actually turn that into a frago that the three-shop can produce at the end of the night or whatever the case may be. But your two-minute drills must be done to where it drives action and there's some output associated with it. Otherwise, we're just briefing each other. It took us almost the entire rotation to learn it. And finally, the evening of the night shift, battle period 3, every two-minute drill produced something tangible that was disseminated at least across the staff, or if needed, down to the battalion commander, company commander level.
Brent, what about you? What was harder than you expected?
Sir, I think what was harder than I had anticipated was the management of terrain amid transitions. So we had clear bat. So to allude back to the rotation, we're set on Objective Angels, the pass complex, prepared to resume the offense. And we've got clear boundaries set for 1/6 infantry to the southern portion of the Central Corridor, 137 in the northern portion of the Central Corridor. And in that final set, we ended up with 1/6 in the south, 137 in the north, 1/1 cav in their security zone. But what I neglected to do was setting that rear boundary for battalions. So I didn't factor in battalion trains. I didn't factor in CP locations for 427FA. Some of the other trains of 427. Of course, PAAs were factored in there, and that's, you know, you always got to start with that. But at the end of the day, battalion trains were not factored in. The battalion rear boundaries were not. And the forward edge of the rear area, that forward boundary of the rear area, was not adjusted. So what ended up happening is the brigade main, 427 FA's main, and a couple other CPs and C2 nodes ended up really tucking in around, you know, the hottest pieces of terrain in the Central Corridor, that being Hill 876 and 780. We deconflicted it, but we could have avoided that by being very clear in the order and being very rapid with our graphics dissemination as far as who owns what and where you can establish your CP, sir.
So if you could give your previous self some guidance on how to mentally prepare for what you just went through, based on all your experiences over the last month, what are the key things you'd say? Hey, make sure you do this, or bring these pieces of paper or this product. Give guidance to your former self.
For me, it would be understanding the importance of, as you alluded to, sir, MIN-4 requirements across warfighting functions tailored to the mission, and understanding how it affects decision-making tied to risk to force, risk to mission. So just to elaborate briefly, I came into this thinking that MIN-4, all we ever talked about was COFUMs with respect to mostly tanks and Brads. This rotation of 52nd ID's products gave us a fantastic baseline of these are the minimum forces we think you should have. But it was so detailed to where it got us thinking about how many battle positions do you want to dig? And then you obviously tie that to how many blades do I have? How many hours in the day do I have? What happens if I don't reach 75% hull deflated position? What happens if retrans is not established? We came into this rotation after LTP with a decent baseline of what does it mean to set conditions and defining MIN-4. But what we did not do, and what I never understood until again now, so if I can go back and tell former Tim Lee, you need to understand minimum force and think through it down by warfighting function, and it should be not so generic of where did you pull 75% from. And if it is 75% OR for 75% hull deflated positions dug, I would ask myself, how did you come up with that number? And if you don't meet that number, do you recommend to the commander go or no go based off of the associated risk to force, risk to mission? I think former self, I didn't turn the macro to micro.
Really powerful description. I think what I'm taking from you is the language of commanders that are helpful for them to understand minimum force requirements, risk to mission, and risk to force, because 52ID tries to be a helpful higher headquarters and do some of the work for you, because commanders are going to get what they want. The answer will be yes, but it was going to come at a cost. Not as much combat power. We need more time, etc. So really well said. Brent, what about you?
Sir, I don't think knowledge management can be emphasized enough. So in starting, as far as good knowledge management, the earliest stage of your training progression. So we executed LTP, excellent rep with Wrangler team. However, we executed product dissemination via MS teams. We had TACCIPR and a JBCP available, and we did push graphics via JBCP. But as far as exercising TACCIPR fully and exercising our portal, that was not executed during LTP. It was encouraged that we do that. We did that to a degree, but it wasn't where we should have been. But if you start exercising your portal and exercising rapid product dissemination via WebMC or JBCP from the get-go, you train battalions to get accustomed to receiving products that way and thus rapidly disseminating products to their subordinate units. So knowledge management. The Brigade S6 team did a phenomenal job developing our portal, which I think was very user-friendly, and our division staff back at home station helped us refine this portal, and we're more than happy to assist any brigade combat team out there that's interested in seeing a good portal. I think the portal was solid.
How did the two of you stay synchronized when there were times where you weren't physically co-located?
On the very last battle period during the live fire, at one point for just a couple minutes, the three, myself, the commander, and the ops sergeant major were all in the same room together. And within seconds, the commander was like, we should never be in the same room together, ever, unless something catastrophic happened. So the three and I learned to communicate over JBCP, Ventrilo, I mean, you name FM, and just a very simple TTP. But when I wanted to talk to the three on FM, just the two of us, just to synchronize, we would just get on command and just say, hey, can you please drop to 210? And then we would have a private conversation to synchronize ourselves, the operation, the staff. But we learned very quickly we should never be in the same place at the same time. While we never built in touch points, we had the comms architecture that remained in place to facilitate these conversations. Because if the three and I are in the same place, it's never a good thing. So usually when he's running plans, I'm running co-ops or the other way around. But we had the touch points. And frankly, for us, we have like a five-year relationship going on. We've worked together for the last 5 years to where we understand almost what the other one is thinking. But we have the communication in place to sustain that.
You got to see the battalion and squadron XOs at the maintenance meeting every day. How did you get to communicate with the battalion and squadron threes?
Sir, so our fundamental battle rhythm event was the op sync. And that served as really the validation of the sync mat for the next 24 hours, that next ATO day. It was another opportunity to rehearse the critical task that had to be accomplished for the next phase. But really the op sync, but there were also informal touch points as well that we executed, whether it was FM or, you know, we were constantly logged into, provided that you had upper TI, that you were logged into the Ventrilo ONI net, and squadron battalion threes could come up at any time. And, you know, somebody, whether it was me or the brigade chops or brigade planner, could chime in and you know, provide an answer to that RFI.
Then how did you guys build in time to interact with the brigade commander to get his guidance so you could, you know, continue to enable the sustainment enterprise and then also kind of drive execution as well as plans in the future?
Understanding where and how the commander fights. Our commander loves the main. He loves FM. He's very analog, very digital. So between 2 minute drills, or whenever he would come in, we always forced the touch point. But even if it was him coming in from the TAC for 2 minutes, I remember one day he came in, hair on fire, Tim, 2 minute drill, tell me everything I need to know. And then because of that, we always forced a touch point, because once he's out, we never know what's going to happen. So even if you think you don't have the time, taking the couple minutes to just force the touch point will help synchronize and understand his intent for, it could be an hour, it could be the next entire battle period.
You got to spend time with him as the TAC went forward a number of times. So you got probably more physical, you know, co-located time with him. How did you make sure you were getting the right kind of feedback, information, and guidance from him while you guys were deployed?
I think the composition of our TAC was ideal for that. It was small, it was agile. And essentially what it consisted of, sir, was two JLTVs, my JLTV, which consisted of a two rep, Strike 2 Alpha, as well as an S6 rep that provided upper TI. And then the second JLTV was our Fires JLTV with the Brigade FSO. And then lastly, of course, and that was the center of the TAC, was the Brigade Commander's Bradley. So Colonel Baker would be inside the Brad. He had his JBCP. He was man in the net. And then I was on literally the ramp with the Brigade FSO with a nice map that was able to be unrolled in his Bradley with the fighting products, X-Check, SyncMat, DSM, underneath that map. So you would have at most 3 to 4 folks on that ramp. You turn the JLTVs off so you can hear yourself, turn the Brad off, recharge the batteries every once in a while, and it is a very sensible way, I think, to ensure that you remain synchronized, that we can actually fight from the TAC, and that we can make recommendations to the boss. But I don't think there was ever any lapse as far as seeing where we were at in the fight. And if we were, I was able to reach back to Tim back at the main, and they would either provide us with an opsum of where we were at or vice versa. We would do the same thing for them to ensure that we remained in sync. But lastly, sir, the upper TI piece was critical. Yeah. Like if retrans for some reason could not ensure the linkage between the TAC and the main, That Brigade S6 rep in my JLTV would enable us to talk.
Was the TAC an enduring thing that was always out there, or was it employed for a temporary period of time for a very discrete purpose?
What it became was employment for a very discrete purpose. That wasn't initially the case as we executed our rollout, and there's a number of variables there. But bottom line, what we determined was it needed to be employed for things such as discrete operations, such as the breach, during an FPOL, we executed two breaches, or the seizure of Barasu or the seizure of Rezisher, ultimately discrete operations and not long-term. Because at the end of the day, even though the TAC I thought was employed effectively, you do lose capability with regard to having sustainment, SA, and other warfighting functions. Sir.
And so what you've just led through, tons of lessons, how is this going to change the way you lead in the future?
Every day that you're in the box, you have to ask yourself, especially at the brigade level, what are you doing to help the battalion? In garrison, the advice I give myself and the staff is you should be able to walk away every single day as the brigade staff of what did you do today to help a battalion? And if the answer is you didn't do anything, you can't think of anything, then I don't think we're serving our purpose of serving the battalions. So as I continue to lead, is in a tactical setting, what I found is all the assets that we had at the main were all focused on up and out. It was answering brigade PIR, assisting in division PIR, looking at the next battle period. But because I was responsible for synchronizing the entire main, I found that I kept asking myself, why was the Cav Squadron consistently, for lack of better words, dying? Why do they have the highest casualty rate? And I found that is because as a leader, I wasn't actually synchronizing the staff to where we were helping shape the non-doctrinal, the now close fight for the brigade. All of our stuff was focused on the next fight, the next phase. We weren't actually helping the Cav specifically look at what's right in front of them because they can only see so far out. So for future me, the question I'm going to ask myself every single day is, what have I done to help that battalion across the brigade? And if I can't answer that, I don't think I've done my job for that day. If I've only answered upper or higher headquarters PIR, and I haven't actually focused at least to an extent down and in, I think we're setting ourselves up for failure.
Our doctrine is evolving with the division becoming the new principal tactical warfighting echelon. Brigades don't have a deep area anymore, but they definitely shape, but only what they can handle. And so getting division to be helpful, especially for, main effort, supporting effort number one, will allow, you as a brigade XO to provide prioritization or resources or time to the squadron in particular. Brent, what about you?
I think the recipe for success, and you addressed this in the AAR yesterday, sir, throughout the rotation, was mastering how do you master the execution of the current fight while planning for the next? That is difficult. How do you achieve that? Especially with, with junior captains, pre-command captains, absolute studs, couldn't be more proud of the staff and my section. But what I owe them is clear priorities, clear task and purpose. And at the initial set, you provide it, and that's fine. But what you have to do is you have to refine that, and you have to update it routinely to ensure that they know what their tasks are. I want to hit on an important transition point, though, and that's transition between the FUOPS and COOPS piece. And what we discussed is at the CAR, you've got, of course, COOPS representation at the CAR, and that's where the handoff occurred. But it wasn't always so clear-cut there. And sometimes a planner would have to come onto the COIC floor, and that was fine to make sure that we were on plan with what was developed. But sir, just as far as finding that opportunity or time to interject and make sure that we had a seamless transition from FUOPS to COOPS is something that cannot be overstated, sir.
Would you agree with Ethan Divin's assertion that we as an Army don't do a good job at the staff of leveraging the experience and the leadership capabilities of our senior non-commissioned officers, specifically our staff sergeants major?
I appreciate, and I recommend this be a talking point and a recommendation from the very first day of RSOI. I think that recommendation was made at LTP, and it was made before we rolled out to the box. And we We listened to that and we took it to heart, and we had absolute studs on the COIC floor and in the plans van, senior NCOs that truly drove the fight at times. So with that, they were the ones on the net, Sergeant Martinez, Sergeant Baumgartner oftentimes, Sergeant Adul. They absolutely crushed it on the net, but they had the fighting products they need in conjunction with the chops. They knew where we needed to be in the fight, and if we were not on time, they at least could even make the recommendation. If I wasn't in the room or the XO wasn't in the room, they could make the recommendation to the boss as far as a decision, because they had the DSM in front of them, or they could tell the boss at least that, sir, we are off time. Where do we go from here? And that happened a number of times, and that was, I would argue, was successful because of the strong NCOs that we had in the CP, sir.
It's outstanding to hear that we can be an officer-led organization, but NCO-run, even at the staff
level. Absolutely, sir.
Exceptional. All right, final question. What advice do you guys have for field grades that are coming to the NTC in the future?
There's a very big difference between telling the staff what they're doing is wrong versus what right looks like. Again, I learned this in the first battle period. I was so frustrated with the staff. So staff, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry.
We love the staff. We are staff for most of our career.
100%, sir. But I kept telling the staff what they were doing was not right. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. But what I never actually did, and I was informed that I never told them what right looks like. NTC is not the time to use the Socratic method and to help them get to where they need to and learn on their own. NTC, especially in a condensed planning timeline, you must tell your staff officers, you must tell commanders, XOs, whatever the case may be, what does right look like? So that way, when they come back to you with the product, it's exactly what you specified. It saves time, and most importantly, it's what you asked for, as opposed to let them figure it out. Eventually, we all will, but you can't just continue to tell someone you're wrong. You have to tell them what the expectation is and what does right look like. Otherwise, you're just going to waste time, and time is something that we'll never get back, especially in the box.
Really well said, spoken just like a BCT XO.
The request for special munitions, employment of special munitions, and understanding the process across the staff is critical. So that is not something that is just relegated to the fire cell, but your engineer, the chops, everybody needs to understand how FASTCAM is requested and how it's employed. And after the first battle period, we had, I think, a common understanding across the staff on how that's executed. The reason why I mentioned FASTCAM, of course, absolute game changer when you employ that properly on micro terrain that Black Horse often leverages. And then the second piece, sir, is more macro in nature, and that's the tax op in general. How do you fight as a brigade? That starts at CPX zero, and it is continually refined until the weeks leading up to NTC, where you slap the table, this is the tax op we're going with. So something that successful, I thought, that we did as a brigade, and Colonel Baker really drove this, was this How We Fight series. And ultimately, what each battalion ended up producing at the end of this series was a card, a tax op card, whether it was how we're going to execute a breach as a brigade, how do we execute a forward passage of lines, an ARPOL, an attack, a defense. But we knew going into this how we were going to fight as a brigade, and the tax op helped immensely with that. But a hard copy of the tax op is critical there.
Gentlemen, you've been exceptional, and the Strike Brigade is lucky to have the First Armor Division, and our Army is lucky to have both of you. You did an exceptional job, you know, integrating, synchronizing the staff to enable Task Force Strike to fight and learn here at the National Training Center. Thanks to both of you, so Majors Tim Lee and Brent Lanier, for your time and exceptional insights. It's our pleasure to fight with your team here during 2507. It is mutually beneficial because we learn by serving alongside you guys. Hey, best practices, best products. As always, our Observer Coach trainers will remain part of your team. We invite you to look at all of our products that we've got hung online, subscribe to our TAC Talks, and we will update our things based on what we have seen and learned from your team. Those quick hitting lessons about how you can strike hard. So thanks for listening to this iteration of Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, brought to you by the Warrior Chronicles here at the National Warfighting Training Center. Train the force, lead, train, win. Now let's go fight.